We're up to Parag Gimel, Pasuk Ches. Right after Haman has done the Geirel, the poor, that we spoke about, he's decided which is the optimum day for him to get rid of the Jews, and now he goes to Achashverosh to request permission. So he introduces it with some Lashon Hara on the Jews. Haman says to King Achashverosh, Yeshna Yamecha, there is a nation. Yeshna, the Gemara says, from the word of sleeping, Yeshnim, there as if they're sleeping. A certain nation, Mefuza or Mefired Ben Ha'amim, that is spread out and scattered between the nations. B'chol Medinos Malchusecha, they're all over in the various Medinos, they're not concentrated really in any one place. V'dosehem Shonis Mikolam, and they have strange laws. And even the king's laws they don't keep. They do their own thing, and they do whatever is convenient for them. They don't keep the king's laws if it doesn't work with what they want to do. And it's not worth it for the king to keep them. In other words, Haman sort of tried to cover all the bases here. He said that they're a strange nation. They don't interact with other people. They don't marry them. The Gemara explains all the different Lashonis, exactly what he was getting at with each one. He was simultaneously speaking to Achashverosh at his level, and at the same time talking to the Rabbi Nishalayim and telling him that his nation has separated themselves from him, from Hashem. So in each of these words, there's a double meaning. I'm not going to go into exactly what each one is, but the upshot of all of it is he's telling Achashverosh these are people that are not worth keeping around. They never want to work. Every day by them is, they're saying today is Pesach, today is a different Yom Tov, today is Shabbos, Shoi, Poi, Pesach Hayoim, Shabbos Hayoim, and they're just not people that really contribute very much to anything, not to the culture, they don't marry other people, and not to the king's finances. They're Jews and they're very tricky with finances, and you have nothing to lose by getting rid of them. At this point, he did not yet say the nation. He said, Yeshner Am Echad, because he was a little concerned that maybe Achashverosh, because of his closeness to Mordechai and possibly Esther, by this point already knew that they were Jewish, that Esther was Jewish, and maybe he had a sympathy for them. So he started off with this introduction of Lashon Hara. The Gemara says that Haman was a great speaker of Lashon Hara. He was a tremendous Baal Lashon Hara who knew how to put people down. And this is what he tells the king. You have nothing to gain from keeping these people around. I'm going to help you out here. Haman is only concerned, of course, for the good of the king, and he says to him, just in case Achashverosh should forgot that for a moment, he says, if it's good for the king, of course, everything I say now is only if it's good for the king. I have no interest, no personal benefit or gain from this at all. What should you do? Achashverosh, Yikosev, you should write a letter or give authority to write a letter. La'abdom, to be ma'abed the Jews. Now the word ma'abed is an interesting word. Literally translated, it means to lose them, to make them be lost. We know that the actual Xer of Haman was much more stringent and cruel than that. He wanted to destroy them in every possible way, wipe them off the face of the earth, spiritually and physically. Hashmid laharig la'abed. But over here he just says, Yikosev la'abdom, they should be lost. He was sort of hinting at like a resettlement program like they had in some of the communist countries, whereby they would take a group of people that they wanted to take out of their comfort zone and out of their place of influence and power and move them somewhere else so that they were new and they had no more power base. We'll assimilate the Jews among everybody else and we'll solve all the problems. Then they'll have to be assimilated. They'll marry with other people. They're going to have to start working. They can't rely on each other anymore. And that was what he ostensibly was asking for in this first request. Then Haman adds something very interesting, and this is going to be the focal point of what we talk about in this share. Haman says, in case you are still worried that it's going to cost the kingdom money, either because of lack of revenue and taxes, you're going to lose something from this, or maybe the actual resettling of the Jews or actually killing them will take manpower and will cost money and it's going to be a loss or an expense for the kingdom. I'll make it up. How much will I make up? I will take 10,000, the word for kikar is translated talents. It's basically blocks of silver. Eshkol I will weigh out. Al yedei oisei hamalacha, by the hand of the oisei hamalacha. Apparently people that worked for the king and could be relied upon to weigh it correctly. Lahavi alginzei hamalach, those who do the work to bring money into the treasury of the king. In other words, the revenue agents. I'll give them this silver and it'll make up for it. Now, just to get a picture of how much money this was, there's different first and they give different cheshbonos, but basically it's a total of approximately 750 tons of silver or 24 million ounces of silver. I'm not exactly sure what the price of an ounce of silver is, but if it's about $50, we're talking about $1.2 billion. $1.2 billion in today's money. If it's $30, so it'll be about 750 or 800. But we're talking about massive $800 million is what it would be. We're talking about massive amounts of money, and Haman is willing to give this to the king in order to accomplish his aim of getting rid of the Jews. So we know there's an incredible Gemara here, which says the following thing. The Gemara says that at this point, when Haman made this offer to the king to give him this amount of money to get rid of the Jews, so the Gemara says, "Goli v'yadua lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu." It was revealed in front of Hashem. She'asid Haman HaRasha lishkoil shkolim al Yisrael. That Haman HaRasha would one day, it was destined that one day Haman HaRasha would come and he would be shekel shkolim, he would weigh shkolim against Yisrael. He would take out shkolim as a means of harming the Jews. Lefikach, therefore, hiktim aleim shkolim l'shkolov. Hashem was maktim to Haman's shkolim, our shkolim. It was maktim to aleihem, on the Jews, shkolim, that they should have to give shkolim l'shkolov, that should come before his shkolim. I believe it says that there was a baskoil that came out that when Haman made this offer, Basel came out and said, "Sorry, it's too late. Our shkolim were there first." Now, this is kind of a fascinating idea. What's this idea of hishkim, of hiktim shkolim, the shkolim of our shkolim came before his shkolim? Well, what does one shkolim have to do with the next? The shkolim that we're talking about is, of course, the shkolim that was given in the Midbar, the machtzis ha-shekel, the half a shekel that each Jew gave towards the building of the Mishkan. And those shkolim came first, and therefore they undid in advance Haman's plan. To the degree, the connection is such that Taisus even says that if you make a cheshbon, Haman's 10,000 kikar kesef equals all of the shkolim that the Jews in the Midbar gave, so that as if our shkolim came first, we gave 10,000 kikar kesef first. So now Haman's 10,000 kikar kesef, they don't count. As if otherwise they would have counted. Had we not given the shkolim in the Midbar, Haman's shkolim would have meant something. They would have accomplished something. But since we sort of beat him to the punch with the same amount of shkolim, we got there first. Now, just as a side point, the Kadosh Kemach points out, and other Mefarshim, that the Chayyur Taisus Cheshbon is not correct, because there were 600,000 Jews, and if you make the Cheshbon of each one giving a half a shekel, it comes out to 100 kikar kesef. In fact, it says in the first in the Torah that it was 100 kikar kesef, and they were used for the adonim of the Mishkan, they were used for the base of the Mishkan. So what does Taisus mean when he says that we gave 10,000 kikar kesef, and Haman matched it, but we got there first? What do you mean? We didn't give it. He gave 100 times as much as we did. So the Kadosh Kemach says that it was it's a mistake. In the original Taisus had said an abbreviation that Haman gave Ches Shin for each Jew that had given a shekel in the machzis a shekel in the midbar. Ches shin later was taken from an abbreviation that was stretched out to say chatzi shekel, but really wasn't chatzi shekel. It really meant chamishim shkolim. Haman gave 50 shkolim. Connected each Jew's half a shekel. So now we're finding out something even more fascinating, that our 100 kikar kesef, our half a shekel, beat out Haman's 50 shekel per person, which is a total of 10,000. In other words, he gave 100 times as much as us, or was willing to give. Actually, it wasn't even accepted. Achashverosh said to him, no, thank you. I don't need the money. You can do your gzeira as you wish. And keep your money. I don't need it. Now, it's an interesting question here. What would you say at the moment that Haman was given his money back? Was he happy or was he sad? Or, well, he probably was happy, but should he have been happy? Most people say, yeah, great, he got what he wanted and didn't even have to pay for it. But the truth is, this is a mistake. At this point, the Baskel came and said, no, you're trying to give money. Your money is no good here. We are not accepting your money. It was rejected. Taisa says v'hakesef. The king said to Haman, v'yemer ha-melech l'Haman, ha-kesef natun loch. The money is given back to you. V'ha'am, and the nation, la'aseh bo yikatov be'enecha. Do whatever you want with them. But Taisa says, ha-kesef natun loch. Ha-kesef is 165 in gematria. Taisa says, he was being hinted over here. You think you're getting money back? You're not getting money back. Ha'etz nasun lach. The tree is being given to you. The tree is, ha'etz is also 165. He says, the hint was, you think you're getting back your money? You're not getting back your money. You're getting the beginning of your downfall, the beginning of your end, which is going to be the hang up in a tree that's 50 amas high. So there's no doubt that he should not have been happy. If he would have really seen it through all the way, he would have understood that getting back the money was a negative thing for him. He needed to have given this money, as he originally thought. But it wasn't accepted. Why not? Because we gave first. We gave it to office. So he can't give now. Now this needs explanation. What's going on here? Why is the money so important? It's so important that later when Mordechai eventually spoke to Esther, he came to speak to her, it says he explained to her everything that happened. There's Paroshas HaKesef, Masha'amah Haman Lishka L'idei Oisei HaMalacha. I'm quoting it, but I'm pretty sure that's the Lashon. That Mordechai explained to Esther also the Parsha, the story of the money, or the Paroshas, the explanation of the money, meaning that there was a very deep explanation over here in this money. It wasn't Stam that he tried to give the money, and Achashverosh said, thanks a lot, we have enough money, we don't need it. Which is obviously nothing that a king ever says. So what's going on here with the money? So to understand this, I want to just take you to a medrash. It's a very famous medrash. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu was niskasha in three things. Now there's a couple of versions of the medrash. All of the versions say that one of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu was niskasha, which he didn't understand, one of them was the menorah. He didn't understand exactly how to make the menorah based on the description given to him by Hashem. And Hashem said, take the actual gold, throw it into the fire, and the menorah will come out. The other versions say he didn't understand the Kiddush HaChodesh exactly, the position of the moon, the way Hashem said, till he showed it to him exactly. Right? He said the Meloshon of Chodesh HaZeh. He showed him exactly how it was, the Chodesh Zelachem. And the third thing that he didn't understand was the Machzis HaShekel. Hashem said that everybody has to give a Machzis HaShekel, and Moshe had a problem understanding it. And so he says, Zeh Yitnu Kol Oiver Ala Pekudim. Everybody has to give a Machzis HaShekel, Zeh. Again, Hashem showed him a Matbea Shel Eish, a coin of fire. Now, it's a little bit strange because the moon, we can understand that maybe Moshe didn't get exactly what Hashem was referring to. Ibra Chodesh is a complicated sugya. Could be something which was hard to understand. The menorah is extremely complex. Even after we actually had a base of Migdash and Moshe Rabbeinu was shown what to do, we still have Machlekes Rishonim exactly what the menorah looked like. So we can understand that Moshe was Niskasha in that. But how was he Niskasha? In what way was he Niskasha in a machzitz shekel? Hashem said everybody should give a half a shekel. Obviously, they had shkolim, pretty obviously. I've seen answers that say that they didn't have coins, but that's not the pashtus. And if there is the pashtus, it wouldn't help for Hashem to show him a chatzi shekel anyways. So what was the problem? Reach into your pocket, pull out a machzitz shekel, and that's what it is. Hashem said everybody should give a half a shekel. What's the complication here? What's the problem? So, and what's the answer of a matbeah shel eish? How does that make it better? So, to understand this, we have to just look at how this world works. The Ramban says like this, that when the Nevi'im wanted that their Nevuah, especially in favor of Klal Yisrael, should come true in a good way, they would often do a physical act to sort of play out that Nevuah. For example, in Yirmiyah you find that he threw a stone into the water and the stone sank, and Yirmiyah then said, Kocha tishka bovel, so should bovel sink. Right? What do you have to throw the stone in the water for? Who is that helping Bechlal? But you see that sometimes a physical act was done in order to bring about a certain reality in the world. We'll explain soon how this worked. Elisha told Yoyash HaMelech, he said to him, Chetz, he told him, shoot an arrow. Chetz teshua l'Hashem, v'chetz teshua ba'aram. Shoot this arrow, and that will be an arrow of teshua for Hashem, and it will be an arrow of teshua into or against Aram. What's the idea behind this? So we know that everything in this world, in the physical world, is really only a physical manifestation of a higher spiritual world. Whatever is down here reflects what's happening up above. We down here, with our actions, Bnei Yisrael in particular, get to influence it. We can do something down here that goes up to Shemayim, makes an hashpo over there, and then it comes back down. The Nefesh HaChaim calls it, he says that's the idea of the pasuk, Yaakov Chevel Nachlosa. Yaakov is the rope of Hashem's inheritance. He explains like a rope. If you've ever been in a gym and they have these ropes that hang from the ceiling all the way down, and you take it and you shake it back and forth. So the more vigorously and with the more strength you put into shaking it, the more the rope is going to sort of wiggle its way up to the ceiling. What happens when the energy that you put in down here gets all the way to the ceiling? It's got nowhere left to go. What happens? It hits the ceiling and bounces back. And the reflection of how it bounces back, the way in which the rope sways and shakes back and forth, is going to reflect exactly the way you originally shook it. He says, that's what Yaakov Chevel, it's the rope. It is as if we are attached to a rope. We're holding on to a rope that's attached to Shemayim. We shake it according to our actions down here. If we do good actions, so we influence it in a good way. If we do negative actions, we create a negative influence. That then travels up to Shemayim because everything comes from Shemayim, like we spoke about, the idea of Mazel, the idea of Hashpoa coming down from Shemayim. And it shakes its way back down to this world. And according to our behavior, we influence the world for good or for bad. This is a known concept. I'm not going to go into it too much. But that the Chayre is the Pshat over here in Moshe's question and Hashem's answer. Moshe's question to Hashem was, I know what a machzitz shekel is. I don't understand why we need to collect a half a shekel from each Jew. Why does everybody have to contribute? If we're looking for someone to help pay for the Mishkan, there's many, many wealthy Jews that came out of Mitzrayim with a lot of gold and silver. All we have to do is say we're looking for a donor. He'll get his name on a plaque in the front, or he won't get his name on a plaque in the front. Within a minute, you'll have people running to give money to be the one to donate the Mishkan. Why are we snoring? Why do we have to go and take a chatzi shekel from this guy, a chatzi shekel from that guy? It's a pain, it's an annoyance to have to do. And it seems small in a way. It seems cheap. Hashem's answer to him was, he showed him a matbeah shel eish. He said, it's not for the machzitz shekel. It's not for the actual physical half a shekel that they're giving down here. You're right, I don't need it. We don't need it. You don't need it. Nobody needs it. What we need is, we need the spiritual half a shekel that's going to be generated through the giving of the physical half a shekel. Everything physical in this world can be transformed into something spiritual by using it for a mitzvah, by using it for a good thing. Hashem said, I want that every Jew should have this protection, and every Jew should be part of this matbeah shel esh, this fiery spiritual coin, which we're going to see exactly what it accomplishes in a moment, but I want them all to be part of the building of the base of the Mishkan. What is the building of the Mishkan? So the Al-Sheikh explains like this. He says, Haman was no fool. He wasn't stam trying to get rid of the Jews, and he wasn't stam. Nothing was stam. He had very deep intentions in his actions. Haman wanted, he knew that Hashem created the world with the koyach of good and the koyach of evil in the world. And Zeluma said, they both have a power. The question was, who's going to win out? What is going to be the default setting of this world? Is this world going to be a world of Toiv, or is it going to be a world of Ra? The setting of the Mishkan was setting up that the world will be implanted, it'll be ingrained in the world, that it's a world where Kedusha thrives. It doesn't mean that you can never have an incident of Tumah, an incident of Avera or Ra or evil. Of course, it's possible for incidents to happen and even a lot of bad to happen. But the final product that this world is going to produce, the basis, the base of this world, is Kedusha. That's what the Mishkan says. Just like Mitzrayim is a place called Ervas Haaretz. It's the erva of the world. It's the tumah of the world. Nothing you're going to do is going to change Mitzrayim into something else. You can be in Mitzrayim, you can keep Shabbos, you can do mitzvahs, but it's not a place that's ever going to be anything but Ervas Haaretz. The Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, ultimately, they're the opposite. They're Kedusha Haaretz. And we have to find the right place for them. That's what David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Ad emtza mokeim l'Hashem. Till I find the right place. I got to find the right place. There is a right place that if I make the Mishkan there, that is going to plant Kedusha and establish Kedusha in the world in such a way that it'll never, ultimately the world will have to come to a tikkun because it's been settled and based upon this Kedusha. Haman's intention was the exact opposite. Haman wanted to make an anti-Mishkan. He wanted to make the world into a place which was not welcoming to Kedusha, which didn't provide a place for the Shekhinah to rest. It doesn't mean you can't have any Kedusha in the world temporarily, but the default option, according to Haman, what he wanted was to bring the world to a place of Tumah, to the 50th level of Tumah, to the Shara Chamishim of Tumah, which as we know is an inescapable level of Tumah, just like in Mitzrayim, it would have become an inescapable level had we actually hit that rock bottom. That's what Haman wanted. And that's why, says the Al-Sheikh, he made a tree to hang Mordechai on, which was specifically 50 amas tall, because that was connected to the 50 levels of Tumah that he wanted to plant into the world. And that's why, says the Gaon, how much money did he give for each Jew? 50 shekel. Not a half a shekel for Haman. For him, he wanted 50 shekel. He needs 50 shekel. Because that's going to bring the entire ladder of Kedusha and Tumah of the 50 levels is going to be totally transformed into Tumah. And that's going to be the final setting of the world. He explains more than that, that the 10 sons of Haman were also connected to Asar Mamaris. But instead of Kedusha, they were going to be for Ra, they were going to be for evil. Now, that's the answer over here with the Shkolem. That's the big deal about the Shkolem. When Hashem says that our Shkolem came first, he wasn't saying that, we gave money first and therefore we're better because we got there first. That's not the idea. It's too late for you to plant Tumah in the world. The base has already been set. We've made the foundation of the world. it's never going to change. You can build temporarily on top of that foundation. You can build tumah, you can do evil, you can do ra. That can happen, but it's a temporary dwelling place. It's not going to be permanent. The permanence has already been established. You know how? Through the shkolim that every Jew, every one of the 600,000 yidden, contributed. The idea of contributing is first of all, using physicality and money for Kedusha. It's also the idea of giving of a sacrifice of oneself, even though a half a shekel is a minuscule amount. But it's the concept of it is taking something from yourself, taking something from your chomer, from your physicality, and contributing it towards Kedusha. And with that, you're going to bring Kedusha into the world. So therefore, Haman needed to give this money. He needed to give it because it was, for him, was actually a tremendous sacrifice. He was willing to give up everything he had. What we call L'shem Shemayim, but him was the opposite. It was L'shem Gehenim, let's call it. He was going to give it everything he had in order to destroy the Jews, in order to make this world into a place of Tumah. Says Achashverosh, listen, I'm really sorry. That box is closed. That pushka no longer accepts. It's full. You know what it's full? It's full because the Jews already planted Kedusha. This money is being given to provide Tumah in the world. There's not going to be Tumah in this world anymore. Not in a permanent fashion the way Haman wants to make it. And the money was thrown back in his face. It was rejected. And that's why Taisa says, when the money was given back, HaKesef Nosan Loch, the money is given to you, HaEitz Nosan Loch. Where is this Eitz? Where do we first find the Eitz? We find the Eitz in the beginning of the world when the world is being decided. Eitz Hadas, the tree Hadas Toivera, the tree through which the knowledge of good and bad will be known. These are the two options in the world, Toiv and Ra. Says the Gemara, what's the remez to Haman in the Torah? How do we know there's a Haman? How did the Torah teach us that there's going to be a Haman? Where's there a hint? Just like by Esther we had a hint, and by Mordechai there's a hint. What's the hint of Haman in the world, in the Torah? Hamin ha'eitz. After Adam and Chava ate from the tree, Hashem spoke to them and said, did you eat from the tree? Hamin ha'eitz. Asher tzivisicha levilti achol mimenu acholt. Over there, the word is not even Haman, it's Hamin. Did you indeed? Hamin, did you? Since Hamin and Haman are spelled the same, the Gemara says, there's the remez. What's the remez? What's with Haman? It's not even the same word. It's Hamin. No, there's a couple of ideas. But the one I want to talk about, focus on now is the idea of the Hamin ha'eitz. You wanted to take the part of the eitz, which is the Ra, which is going against the Ratzon Hashem, which was to destroy the world. That's not going to happen. He sees an incredible stam, another hint in this pasuk. The Sefer Neflois Miteresecha, like almost not to be believed. The Gemara says the Haman was the greatest Baal Lashon Hara ever. Him and the Nochash, the original snake, his spiritual grandfather, the snake in Gan Eden, who convinced them, also big Baal Lashon Hara. If you look at the Seif Tevis of this pasuk, Hamin Ha'etz. So it says Hamin Ha'etz, that's a hint to Haman. Now, Asher Tzivisicho Levilti Achoyel Mimena Acholta. If you look at the Seif Tevis, Asher is a Reish, Tzivisicha is a Chof, Levilti is a Yud, Achol, Lamed, Mimenu, Vav, Acholta, Tof, Rechilus. It spells out the word Rechilus. It's a hint that the one we're talking about over here was a Baal Lashon Hara, Baal Rechilus, par excellence. That's the Pshat. That's the Oymek of the story of the money over here. Haman said, I want to give money, I'm ready to sacrifice everything to destroy Klal Yisrael. Hashem says, I'm really sorry. We got here first. We're not going to take your money. Thank you very much for the offer, but you can have your money back, which ultimately means you are going to be hung on the same tree that you are trying to hang us. You're trying to plant a tree of Tumah in the world. Too late. There's already a tree of Kedusha, and that's where you're going to be hung. Just very quickly, to understand the idea of why, if Haman Lamaisa was offering 100 times as much as us, why did we win that battle? Right? We only gave 100 kikar kesef. He gave 10,000 kikar kesef. So it's true we got there first, but why is his sacrifice not somewhat more valuable than ours? Right? He's sacrificing so much more. He's giving 100 times as much as we are. So I once heard from Rav Wolfson, it's an amazing idea. First of all, where did these kikar kesef of the Jews go? we mentioned before, it was 100 kikar kesef that went in the midbar, and it was used for the adonim in the Migdosh. The base that held the Mishkan up, the krushim of the Mishkan, the silver adonim, that's what this silver was used. So I'm just going to find the pasuk. It's Perek Lamed Ches, pasuk Chav Zayin in Shmois. It says like this. Vayhi ma'as kikar ha-kesef, and it was that this 100 kikar kesef was used, lotzekes es adnei ha-kodesh, to cast and to form the adnei ha-kodesh, the adonim, the base, the sockets that the krushim were placed in, es adnei ha-pareches. Now, the end of the pasuk is interesting. It seems maybe a little bit too wordy. Ma'as adonim, there were 100 adonim, lima'as ha-kikar, for the 100 kikar, kikar lo'adon. It's doing the math for us. There were 100 adonim for 100 kikars. Each adon was the size of a kikar. So I once heard from Moshe Wolfson, he says that the greatest bracha, the highest level of bracha in this world, is 100 times. The minimal bracha means doubling. You have one, you get two. That's a doubling is minimal bracha. Then you can triple something, quadruple, and so on and so forth. The highest level of bracha that Hashem gives in this world is when somebody gets 100 times what he started with. You find that by Yitzchak, it says that Yitzchak was in Sparach Bashana, he meya sha'arim, 100 sha'arim, that's the highest level of bracha. There's a lot to talk about, I don't want to go into it now, exactly what meya sha'arim represents and what it stands for, but the level of 100 is the idea of that's the world that we live in today, is a world of meya, it's a world of hundreds. It's a shrunken world that was shrunken after we lived. It was a world of alafim when we were in Gan Eden. After the chet of the Eitz Hadas, it was shrunken to a world of hundreds. If you want to just see it in one place, the highest number that you can reach using the aleph base in the single column and the tens column and the hundreds column, right, you would say is 499. Tav, tzadi, tes. Again, without repeating letters. But the truth is, there's another five letters which are called the Mantzapach, the Sofiyot, and they're worth Mantzapach, Mem, Nun, Tzadi, Pei, Chav, 500, 600, 700, 800, or 900, respectively. The highest number you can reach is 999. Once you get to Aleph, once you get beyond that, to the world of 1,000, you're back to start again. You're up to Aleph, which is, again, the repetition of Aleph, just at a higher level, at a higher pitch. He sort of turned over the odometer. But Al Kalponim, the highest number we can get to is a bracha of 100. So says Rav Wolfson, he said that that's the pshat in the pasuk, that the 100 kikar kesef, Hashem gave us a bracha. He said, you each are only going to give me only a machzis a shekel. One day Haman's going to come and give 100 times as much. He's going to give 50 shekel per Jew. So he's got a hundredfold advantage over you. But I will look at it, since you came first and you gave with Mesiras Nefesh and you want that there should be Kedusha in the world, I'm going to value everything you gave times 100, he says. And that's the pshat in the pasuk. Ma'as adonim lema'as ha-kikar. Kikar lo'adon. If you read it like this, there was 100 adonim. Now read the last four words. Lema'as ha-kikar, kikar lo'adon. It was 100 kikar, keneged each kikar lo adon. That the kikarim that the Jews gave were against the 100 kikar that Haman gave. For every kikar that the Jews gave, Haman gave 100 kikar. The ma'asa kikar, for the 100 kikar of Haman, you gave a kikar lo adon, and I'm going to look at them as if they're the equivalent of what Haman gave. But that's just to understand it in the pasuk. It's a nice vart. The idea, though, is that we got there first. We had already determined through our donations to the Mishkan that this was going to be a world where Kedusha would ultimately thrive and not Tumah, and that's how we defeated Haman's plan against us. So Hashem defeated it looking forward many generations.